Show on Scoops with DannyMac.com. It is the Thursday, March 18th, 2021 edition of the program, but it feels like a Wednesday because the NCAA tournament starts tomorrow. That's right, going the Friday, Sunday, and Saturday, Monday games this year in the pods, and we're going to have some basketball talk, some hoops talk, some tournament talk coming up in just a bit. We've talked a lot of Mizzou, Illinois, and NCAA tournament this week. Going to talk some hockey as well in just a couple of moments. Scott Burnside, our guy from The Athletic, is going to be with me. We'll talk Blues. We'll talk NHL trade deadline, which is a month away. The Blues fall last night in LA to the Kings. Scott Burnside of The Athletic coming up in just a few minutes. Cardinals continue to roll along. So busy times, and that's the way we like it in the month of March. Here at ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. Don't forget, subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Scoops with Danny Mac. Take a screenshot of your review and send it to me on Twitter at CHRABE, and you could get some Scoops with Danny Mac swag. Tweet me regardless. Say what's up, and we'll trade takes like we did with Jarrett Sutton and Sam Snelling earlier this week. You can email me too, chris@scoopswithdannymac.com. All right, so we're going to talk hockey first. Scott Burnside of The Athletic in just a second. And then, in case you want just a refresher, or if you happened to somehow miss any of the shows from earlier this week, we're going to get a little Mizzou Illini primer. We'll hear from Jarrett Sutton and Sam Snelling on Mizzou. We'll hear from Ryan Fagan on Illinois. So all that on the Chris Rabe Show. And we kick off with some hockey talk. Well, it's great to have Scott Burnside with us as we talk a little hockey. Of course, if for some reason you are not already, head over and subscribe to The Athletic at theathletic.com. Follow Scott on Twitter at OvertimeScottB. What's going on, man? What a year removed from last March and sports evaporating into the ether it is, as we've got the NHL, NBA rolling along, March Madness, spring training. What's happening?
Honestly, it's like for a lot of people, there is a certain blur factor to, you know, what's gone on the last year. And I always have to catch myself when I'm trying to do a time reference. And when you think about the playoff bubble and the bubbles in Toronto and then in Edmonton, where we saw the final two rounds played. Of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and then the draft after that, which was in October, which throws everything out of whack. And of course, this season with the 56 games starting in January, you really do have to remind yourself of sort of the distortion of time, as we look at what's going on with this NHL season, which is now at the midpoint and 4 weeks and counting, well, less than 4 weeks now, to the trade deadline, which is always, you know, for me, that line in the sand. Once you get to the trade deadline, then it's that rush to the playoffs, and it really is truly the stretch run. But this will be an unusual trade deadline period with the divisional only play and the restrictions on the border going into Canada. So lots of uncertainty and lots of uncharted territory, I think, for a lot of NHL teams as we head towards that April 12th trade deadline.
Yeah, we'll talk in a moment about a great piece that you have at The Athletic, 6 NHL trade deadline deals I want to see happen. You can also, if you're not subscribing, jump on for $1 per month right now at theathletic.com. I'm wondering, Scott, as you mentioned the bubble, and we get ready as sports fans for the NCAA tournament, your take on what that will do to the quality of play. And, you know, coming out of the NHL bubble last year, the NBA bubble, I heard a lot of NBA players talk about, and the numbers prove, the quality of play was up and at a level that really, of course, benefits from not having to travel and having the same sight lines during games. And, you know, just there's routine. There's challenge in that because you're isolated, but there's routine. What did you see with the NHL in terms of having consistent ice surfaces, not having to get on planes late at night and fly, and for some Western Conference teams, fly all over the place. How did you see that affect or impact the quality of play? And do you think there could be a trickle effect in other sports, like in March Madness beginning this weekend?
I am curious to see how the tournament goes, how it unfolds. And that's a little bit different dynamic, of course, because it, you know, being one and done. And so the urgency 100% is already in place there. I think it was, you know, it was interesting to watch the, with the NHL bubble and the way they established it in terms of the play-in round, and then the round robin. So the teams that were, of course, at the top of the standings at the time of the pause, didn't have to go right into the best of five play-in rounds. Of course, St. Louis was one of those teams. I think it was hard for a lot of those, or some of those play-in teams, or sorry, the round robin teams, to get the urgency up. I think we saw that with the Washington Capitals, who looked very flat when they got to, the traditional first round of the playoffs and were beaten badly by the Islanders. I don't think St. Louis ever really got into a groove, you know, losing to Vancouver in the first round. I think it was hard for some of the maybe teams that were a little bit more veteran, had some success the last couple of years, like St. Louis and Washington, the previous cup winners in 19 and 18, respectively. It was hard for them. But in terms of the actual play, I think for me, what it was in talking to the players and coaches, the key was to find that internal motivation, because without the crowds, and especially in playoff, the environment in a normal NHL playoff building, I think it's like unlike any other in pro sports. It's just that it's so dynamic. It's so compelling. And whether you're the visiting team or the home team, it can drive you forward. If you're the home team and the fans are booing you, it can cripple you. And none of that was there. So I think that was the interesting part. How did teams like Tampa, which of course went on to win the Stanley Cup, Dallas, which went to the final for the Western Conference, how did those players night after night find the motivation internally without that external crowd noise and the buzz of being in your own building and knowing what was on the line? I thought that was really interesting. And I thought the quality for the most part was excellent. I thought the hockey was excellent. I won't be surprised if we see a very high level of competition at the tournament, even though it will be in a similar kind of bubble.
I think the closest thing really to the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, Scott, and that atmosphere is probably March Madness, because you can be a Blues fan. It can be the first period of the first game of the first round, and you can still feel like you want to puke. Oh my God, we're done, just because of the urgency of every shift. Like, the first inning of a World Series game, is even game seven, is still the first inning. Right. And
right.
I think that if there are Kentucky fans in the building and Ohio State's playing Drexel, if Drexel's close, they're going to all root for Drexel, and you'll feel that in the building. Like, we're not going to have that this year. So yeah, it'll be interesting, I guess, to see from an emotional standpoint how that affects things and how that affects some of the underdogs, I guess, as well.
Yeah. Well, and I think you have to, you know, as time goes on, and I know that when I talk to players and coaches and the staff who are there, it's hard. There is that sense of isolation, and especially, I remember talking to Zach Bogosian, defenseman from the Tampa Bay Lightning, during the bubble. And he had been, you know, he'd had a tumultuous year. He'd been in Buffalo. His contract had been basically negated by the Sabres, and he ended up signing just before the, the trade deadline with the Lightning, and a young family at home in Minnesota, waiting to see what was going to happen. And the fact it was his first ever time in the playoffs, he's a veteran player, and not to be able to share that on a daily basis with his family, it was really hard. And I think there are all of those kinds of dynamics, and whether you have a young family, maybe you've got, you know, an illness at home or elderly parents, all the things during this pandemic that can weigh on you when you don't have that contact on a daily basis or that regular contact. Again, that goes to what kind of support system the team has in place, and the bond within each of those teams is going to be challenged, especially as you go deeper and deeper into that tournament, because the deeper you go, the longer you are away from the reality of your world at home, wherever it is. And especially now with, you know, more and more, you know, we get a sense that things are returning a little bit, to a piece at a time, towards normalcy. But to be in that bubble for that period of time, you'll be removed from that. And it will provide its own mental challenges, no question about it.
It's well said. You can read Scott's piece on the half dozen deals that could happen by the NHL trade deadline. We're a month away. And as you alluded to, or deals you want to see happen, as you alluded to, Scott, an interesting wrinkle with the divisional play and some of the realignment that we've seen as we stand right now in the middle of March. Where do you think the Blues stand in terms of navigating some injuries, in terms of their cap space? Do they need to see how the next month develops? Just if you were buying or selling stock right now in the Blues at this point, would you buy, sell, or hold?
That's a great way to put it. I think to me, the Blues are in sort of a hold situation. Although I would sort of lean towards buying. If I'm Doug Armstrong, the GM of the Blues, and I rarely pretend that I am Doug, occasionally I do, but no, most of the time I don't pretend to be Doug Armstrong.
No one would tweet it early. It would come out of nowhere and catch everyone off guard.
That's it, exactly. But I'm sure that there are some Blues fans who, you know, feel a little bit uncertain that the Blues are at the midpoint in fourth place. I think a lot of us imagine there was going to be a lot more separation at the top of the West Division. I think a lot of us imagined that it would be a very close battle with Vegas and Colorado and St. Louis as the top three teams, and that they would distance themselves pretty easily from the rest. It hasn't happened that way. Minnesota's been really good, surprisingly good. Colorado, not as dominant as a lot of people thought. And the Blues have had some ups and downs. They haven't played very well at home. And I think, but to me, a team like St. Louis, you have to temper all of that, because this is a team that knows what to do, when to do it, in spite of the fact I didn't think they were really motivated or not fully engaged in the bubble last year. You go back to 19, so you understand this is a roster that really does understand the ebbs and flows of a long playoff run and all those kinds of things. I think I'm certain they're a playoff team. And their injuries have been an issue, right? They've had critical parts in and out of the lineup, of course, missing Vladimir Tarasenko until very recently, coming back from, I think it's his third shoulder surgery. Yeah. So you miss him for the first half of the season. You've had Colton Parayko, and I'm not sure people understand how important Colton Parayko was to the Stanley Cup run in 2019, and certainly since the retirement of Jay Bouwmeester. Colton Parayko is a huge part of what is going on with the Blues, and of course with Alex Petrangelo going to Vegas in the offseason. So his injury is an issue. You know, Robbie Thomas being out. Lots of issues. I think it's taken Tory Krug some time to find a comfort zone for him since coming over, basically to fill the void that Alex Petrangelo created when he signed with Vegas. So there's been some issues there. But I do like this team. I think they're well coached. I think there is an understanding of what needs to be done there. So, they probably aren't where a lot of people would have expected them to be in terms of separation from, you know, not being in the playoffs. But I like so much of this team. You know, the guy that I'm so impressed with, I got a chance to spend some time with him during the 2019 playoff run and do a piece is David Perron.
Yes. Oh my God. Is he playing well?
29 points in 28 games. What a great story.
And just the best guy ever too.
Yeah, he is. So, you know, again, I think there are probably areas of concern, but to me at the midpoint with this team and knowing their history, I would put them at a very sort of moderate to low level of concern. That's my assessment.
Well, before we wrap up, I'll ask you about the deadline. And, you know, it's interesting to think about the trade deadline and what it can do for organizations, but players too. And you know, Perron will say and be open, as you know, about how tough it was in Edmonton and what getting traded to Pittsburgh and getting to play with, you know, some of those guys, and then getting traded to Anaheim, getting to play with Ryan Getzlaff, like what that did for his career and what that then did, I think, for the Blues when he came back. So there are some big names in your piece. You have four teams in the West, including an intra-division potential trade you'd like to see. I won't give it away. Go subscribe at theathletic.com. But Scott, will you give us maybe your favorite deal of the six that could happen a month from now?
Yeah, here's the one that I don't know whether this will happen, and I'm just curious to see how the Dallas Stars are going to deal with some really crushing salary cap issues moving forward. You got Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin, who account for north of $19 million against the cap, and we know the cap's going to be flat at $81.5 million for the next couple of years until the economics get sorted out after the pandemic and the shortened season. So, and for me, the guy that's so interesting is John Klingberg, such an important part of that Dallas blue line. He was a critical part of that team going to the Stanley Cup final, two wins short of a cup championship. He's got one more year left on his deal, but he doesn't have any trade protection, and he's going to be due a very significant pay increase. I'm not sure the Dallas Stars can afford to keep him. That's just the reality facing Jim Neal. And I know there's a team in Philadelphia desperate for a top four defender, maybe someone to play with Ivan Provorov. It would be a huge deal. Might be too much to do at the trade deadline. But I'm curious to see if the Stars, who look like they have a huge uphill battle to get back in the playoff picture in the Central Division after a rocky start, that's the one I'm curious about. John Klingberg to Philadelphia. That would be the one that I'm curious to see whether that might have some legs and might actually come to fruition.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, a similar age, you know, apples and oranges maybe a bit, but a similar age as to when the Blues acquired Jay Bouwmeester and what Bouwmeester did to steady that blue line, which you mentioned earlier. And the Blues beneficiaries a handful of times now and other teams' cap issues. And Doug Armstrong, man, you're right. He just... I would say I'd be surprised the Blues kept wheeling and dealing, but I'm never surprised with that guy, I guess.
Well, they have some cap issues, which may make it difficult.
Oh yeah.
And I guess the interesting thing, and especially when you've had the injuries that the Blues have had, and I know it's almost a cliche, but the idea that Vladimir Tarasenko coming back into the lineup at the stage that he is almost like the ultimate trade deadline acquisition, right? Your own ad kind of thing. And it's funny, I remember back when I was at ESPN, I remember the night that Jay Bouwmeester became a Blue. And it does take some time. Sometimes it takes time.
Took time with Justin Falk.
Find the groove. So I think if you're a guy like Doug Armstrong and you've got to Torrey Krug.
I wasn't saying Klingberg to the Blues. I just meant the kind of impact he could make if someone's able to snatch that up. Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah, no, I understand. But I was just thinking in terms of, you know, guys who take some time and a guy like Torrey Krug, who is taking some to me, Justin Falk is another guy, who came in and it's taken him, you know, like the better part of a season. I know it's all disjointed now, but
that was rough. Yeah.
I think Doug Armstrong probably likes his mix, you know, he must be pretty satisfied, I would think, with that mix. Jordan Kyrou is another guy that, you know, one of the kids who's come in and taken an advantage of the opportunities with some of the injuries to other veteran players and really taking advantage of that opportunity. And I think as a GM, man, those are the best kinds of things that can happen to you when you see that homegrown talent who, means you don't have to go elsewhere. You don't have to look outside the building to maybe find some of your answers. So
it's a great point. Scott Burnside, head to theathletic.com. Yeah, that was another trade for Brian Elliott, the pick they got from Calgary, Jordan Kyrou. Follow Scott on Twitter. It's Overtime Scott B. And again, check out his piece, Six Deadline Deals He Would Like to See Happen. Appreciate it, my friend. We'll talk soon as we continue, and all the best. Thanks so much for the time, Scott.
Yeah, Chris, anytime.
Ryan Kelly, the home loan expert, is one of the great sponsors of the program and Scoops with DannyMac.com. And right now, is a perfect time to learn about a home loan refinance. You hear the word all the time, but maybe you don't even know what you're doing. Essentially, you're redoing your loan. So in terms of your first mortgage, you're retooling your loan. The home loan expert is paying off your current loan and giving you a brand new loan. You can decide the term, 30 years. You can go shorter. Give them a call. Look at your current mortgage and ask the home loan expert, Ryan Kelly, if they can do anything to improve your situation. It all depends on your goal, and they will work with you. But everyone with a mortgage loan can benefit from calling Ryan Kelly, the home loan expert, today for a free mortgage analysis. Go to thehomeloanexpert.com, thehomeloanexpert.com. Learn about not just the incredible loan offers that they have, but also the incredible customer service, their customer-first approach that separates them from anyone else you could get a mortgage through. Ryan Kelly is the home loan expert online at thehomeloanexpert.com. Schnucks Rewards, one more reason to love Schnucks. Get the app that gets you Schnucks Rewards. The Schnucks Rewards app allows you to earn points every time you shop for money off your next purchase. But there's so much more in the app to simplify shopping. For instance, you can get exclusive digital savings, including over 100 new digital coupons every week. The shopping list helps keep you organized. Add items on the go. Plus, you can share it. Recipes in the app make meal planning easy. Search for recipes by ingredients and add them to your shopping list. Go to schnucks.com and check out more about the app that gets you Schnucks Rewards, the Schnucks Rewards app. Download it on the App Store or Google Play. The Schnucks Rewards app rewards you for shopping at Schnucks. All right, big thanks to Scott Burnside. And again, just have everything rolling right now. The NHL and NBA headed towards the playoffs, Major League Baseball getting ready to start, the Masters around the corner, and the NCAA tournament starting this weekend. Man, what a year. And I'm going to try not to take it for granted. Try not to take any of it for granted, although that is much easier said than done. All right, a quick like 9-minute refresh, reset primer on Mizzou and Illinois as they get set for the tournament. We'll start with Mizzou. I was joined by former Missouri Tiger Jarrett Sutton and Sam Snelling of Rock M Nation and got both of their thoughts on the matchups and where Mizzou could have an advantage. First, Jarrett.
I think when I look at Mizzou right now and where they're at, I mean, Jeremiah Tillman to me is still such an important piece from a matchup standpoint, because I think when Jeremiah is good, it makes everything a lot better. When he's doing things defensively, rebounding the ball to high level, staying out of foul trouble, finishing at the rim, playing in pick and roll with Xavier Pinson, allowing Pinson to get downhill, make plays, and hit him in dunker spots and hitting him on the roll lobs and getting him in single coverage. And then Jeremiah getting doubles, I think, opens up other guys for cutters like Drew Smith, who's a really high IQ player that moves really well without the ball. So I'll put it on Jeremiah Tillman, but I still think in this game, and I think what's interesting about this matchup is, like we've said, Missouri and Oklahoma reflect each other pretty similarly in a lot of ways. They got some older players. So when you look at Oklahoma, Austin Reeves, Brady Manick are those two older players that can do a lot of things and are going to be the two most important players probably on the floor. Elijah Harkless will be in there as well. But they got experience, and they got a guard, and they got a big that can do things. And I think that's what's interesting about the matchup is, defensively, I'll be curious what Konzo goes with Mitchell Smith at times to guard on the perimeter, because you know Brady Manick, they're going to try to bring Jeremiah Tillman out on the perimeter to guard on the perimeter. And I would think that there's going to be some substitution patterns there. And I think Jeremiah Tillman's got to stay out of foul trouble in this game. It's really important. And then from a guard standpoint, this team is so much better in transition. We know that when they push pace and they limit teams to one shot and they can get out and have live ball turnovers and have their defense lead the offense, is when they can, you know, score points and set their defense, and they can get a lot of confidence and they build, and it's defense to offense, and then they share and they have that balance. When they struggle, they're not forcing turnovers. They're giving up, you know, offensive rebounds. They're not rotating defensively. They're not communicating. And I think this Oklahoma team, they are a very balanced team as well. I mean, they can score the ball. They got guys that can make shots. They can stretch the floor with Brady as a big shooting threes. And defensively, I think Coach Kruger, I think he would say this is one of his better teams defensively at Oklahoma. Now, they have had ups and downs for sure, but they've won games on their defense, especially back in December. But that to me is where the game is going to be won and lost, is the defensive side of the ball, which both these teams know they got to defend to win. But it's also them executing on offense, making perimeter shots, which, you know, is Mark Smith going to step up and make threes? What Mark Smith is going to show up? Are we going to get production from a Mizzou standpoint from Mitchell Smith, Javon Pickett? Does Konzo go to Torrance Watson a couple times? You know, what does that look like off the bench for Missouri, getting them production off the bench? So it's sort of like what team shows up for me. I mean, when you're saying who's winning this matchup, I think Oklahoma would say the same thing. Like, it depends on what team shows up. And Jeremiah Tillman's got to be good for this team. I think if they have a chance to get through this opening round and you look to the next round, he's got to be really good. Xavier Pinson's got to be consistent and get downhill and be in attack mode. And then I think if this game is close, which I could see it very much being close, I could see it being somewhat of a slugfest in the 60s. That could be the case, especially in Lucas Oil with depth perception and guys can struggle to make shots in an opening round game like that. I think when you look at closing games out, who's got to have the ball late in the game, it's got to be Drew Smith. I mean, I think he's earned that late in games. He's an older player. We saw him hit a shot against Florida that won them a game, a much needed win, obviously, now that you look at it. But he's got to be the guy probably late that has the ball in his hands in some sort of isolation, getting him space to work. And I think that would be your late game scenarios there. But it's going to be a good matchup. I think if you're just a college basketball fan in general and don't have a tie to Oklahoma and Missouri, it's a good game to watch in that 8-9 line, especially looking ahead of who's might play Gonzaga.
And Sam Snelling.
The biggest indicator for me, like how efficiently Missouri is able to kind of generate offense, is their 2-point percentage. And when they're going well, they are kind of getting those primary and secondary break opportunities. When they're getting out on the floor and running, you're finishing with guys, you're finishing with, Drew Smith, Mark Smith, Javon Pickett, getting out and running, and being able to finish those, as opposed to, you know, contested 2-point shots in the half court. So if teams are able to kind of limit what Missouri does in transition and they have to kind of go to the half court, then you get more like the pick and roll offense with Xavier Pinson. As much as we like X, like, one of the things that he does is he's not great around the rim if he's not getting foul calls. And we all kind of know that officials like to kind of put away their whistles more later in the season and in tournament play, and they're not as likely to call as many of those, like, you know, body contact kind of calls that Xavier was kind of getting early in the season. So when his free throw rate is high, Missouri is generating a more efficient offense, and they're able to kind of keep those percentages up. But when he's not getting those calls, he's really missing a lot of close in, you know, two attempts against defense, and that causes that to kind of sink. So yeah, I mean, I do think that the turnovers is something that is going to help Missouri, but it's not just turnovers. It's long rebounds. It's forcing Oklahoma to miss contested shots and then getting that and going quickly. As long as they're forcing misses, they're not allowing second shots. It doesn't necessarily have to be turnovers, but still getting those transition opportunities and finding a way to score against a defense that isn't set is very clearly a key for Missouri.
All right, Illinois on the other side of the bracket, and a brutal, I think, by everyone's really evaluation, draw for the Illini, as they've got Oklahoma State in their region. They could wind up playing Loyola in the second round if they win their first round matchup. The Illini, a one seed. Here's Ryan Fagan from Sporting News.
Going into the bracket, you know, not before the seeds were out, in my mind, My dream scenario for the Final Four or title game matchup was Illinois versus Oklahoma State. You know, I thought that would have been a great matchup, number one seed versus number two or three seed. Somehow, Oklahoma State wound up as a four seed, which is mind-boggling. It was mind-boggling on Selection Sunday. It's still mind-boggling now. I think they had a better record than literally any of the number three seeds, especially a West Virginia team they beat twice during the regular season. I don't understand how that happened. And now all of a sudden my dream title game matchup is going to happen in the Sweet 16. And it sounds weird to say this, but I think whoever wins that Sweet 16 title game, or that Sweet 16 game between Illinois and Oklahoma State, is going to the national title game. You know, that's how much I think of those teams. You know, I think that Illinois has a, you know, and Illinois is going to have a tough second round game if it's against Loyola. You know, Loyola is not a pushover as a number 8 seed. I think Illinois is good enough to take care of that though. But you know, this is an Illini team that is very much capable of winning a national title. Absolutely. The second round and the third round games are going to be brutal. If they can get through Oklahoma State, which I really do think it'll be Oklahoma State, even though Tennessee could give them trouble in the second round. I think that Illinois has a very good chance of getting into that title game against Gonzaga.
Plenty of tourney talk as we go forward, and looking forward to just kicking off what's always one of the best weekends of the year. That's tomorrow through Monday. All right, that's going to do it for us on the Chris Rabe Show on Scoops with Danny Mac.com. We'll be back tomorrow. Another Scoops High School Spotlight. Until then, Chris Rabe saying a big thank you to Scott Burnside. Thank you to Jarrett, Sam, and Ryan. And until tomorrow, I'm Chris Rabe saying be nice to each other. And as always, peace.